Okay, they're both recording.
All right, hit it. Welcome to As You Wish, broadcasted live deep within the earth from a little wilderness town called Trout Lake, Washington, where the women are strong, the men are good-looking, and the children, well, most of them have been abducted. UFO and Paranormal Central, a cryptozoologist's dream. Thanks for joining us. We're playing around with that new intro. We'll probably go back to our old intro, but I thought it was kind of funny considering the fact that we are in Trout Lake, which is much like Lake Wobegon. We had our Lake Wobegon moment today where we finished putting in our irrigation ditches and everything was looking good. And then we had a little backup in our showers and it was like a chain of events that was just insane. But, you know, we had one of those metal snakes that you put down there to clean it out, and whatever it was down there grabbed the snake and wouldn't give it back to us. So we had four men and a lever out there working on this thing, trying to get the snake out. And now we don't have a snake anymore. We have this long, thin piece of piano wire that was finely tuned until we cut it. But anyway, we finally had to cut the pipe and get everything out there, and turned out somehow cement got into our drain. We have no idea how that got in, but anyway, we busted it out and everything's up and running again. But it was a pretty crazy event. Speaking of crazy, you know, these solar flares, this solar maximum that we're moving into, so solar cycle 24 is so intense, and the energy is coming in so hot and strong. And it's making a lot of people irritable. A lot of people are losing it. It's affecting the bioelectric fields around the human body. And so you're going to see just a lot of craziness going on, and if it wasn't already crazy. And so hang in there, you know, and find a way to, you know, to release some of this energy and get your feet on the ground, you know, get out in nature. And sometimes you just have to walk away from things and wait and come back at them later. But, you know, it's just getting stronger and stronger. And I don't even think it matters if there's a solar flare, because the energy streaming to the earth is so intense right now. It seems like we're turned into a plasma universe, and things are changing all the way down to the very atom itself. So hang on. We all knew this was coming. We signed up for this ride, and, you know, it's going to get interesting. Tomorrow night's show, I want to give people a heads up. We have Courtney Brown coming on the show, and with an amazing interview. And we're working on getting part two done, hopefully. But we just scratched the surface on some of the things that we wanted to cover. And I thought it was interesting because his remote viewing, they have 20 remote viewers, and they're the best of the best. And the double-blind studies, I mean, the people that give them the target, they didn't even write down the target. I mean, they're so far removed. And it's amazing the information they've gotten. And it's the same information that we've been given. You know, and they talk about, you know, economic collapse, a lot of movement on the oceans, a lot of ocean displacement coming up in the future, the solar flares increasing and grid going down, among other things. So we've been seeing this as well. You know, I don't want to sound like a doom and gloomer or, you know, put out the fear porn, but basically that's on the books, and I don't see a major change coming with that yet. But there could be divine intervention. You know, I have that old saying, you know, praise Allah, tie your camel. So you might want to cover yourself on every level and pay attention. But I think one of the things that intrigued me is he said that everybody was on foot. You know, by June of 2013, he said everybody was on foot and there was a migration away from the coast. So I want to be a heads up on that one. You know, pay attention and see what your own dreams and your own meditations are telling you. And, you know, be aware of that, you know, denial is not a river in Egypt. You know, it's within the hearts and minds of quite a few people right now who think the status quo is going to continue as usual, and it's not. But With any further ado, I want to bring Freeman on the show, and he's an internationally known award-winning TV producer, filmmaker, radio talk show host, and lecturer. He's lectured extensively on secret signs and symbolism of Freemasonry, the ancient astronaut hypothesis, ancient civilizations, the occult, trauma-based mind control, social engineering, government conspiracy, human cloning, technologies of the future, and synchronicity. For more info on Freeman, you can check out freemantv.com and check into that, and you can get more information about his work and his site. The there's all kinds of things happening here. It looks like we're having a little bit of technical difficulty, but it's straightened out. But anyway, the show is going to be an interesting show tonight, and we're going to see if we can bring Freeman on the show. Freeman, are you with us?
I believe I am.
Okay, great. Yeah, I was wondering if you dropped off there, but it looks like you're on. Speaking of conspiracies, we've had a Skype conspiracy lately where it works perfectly until I bring on somebody that's on the cutting edge, and then all of a sudden it starts acting up, but go figure. But anyway.
Me.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm trying to think of where, you know, I'm interested in all of these things, you know, especially the secret signs and symbolism of Freemasonry and the ancient astronaut hypothesis. The Freemasons, what's really interesting, I didn't even realize this, we didn't even know it as kids, but I guess my dad was a Freemason, but he was also part of the Rotary Club, you know, and he had an outstanding, perfect attendance there at the Rotary Club. And it seems on one level the Freemason stuff is just a good old boy club. You know, it's just another like a Rotary Club. But there seems to be other levels to it as well. I'd love to hear your take on that.
Well, there definitely are other levels to that. And yeah, absolutely what we call porch Masons, the ones at the lower levels, really have no idea of what they're into. My father as well was a worshipful master in the Freemasons. And what I find most intriguing is that most of the people that are into this information come to find out that their family was involved. And they don't know this prior to getting into UFOs, extraterrestrials, or even government conspiracy. But then as soon as they start digging, they find out, oh my God, I have bloodline connections to this. My family's involved. And as you said, the fathers never tell. My father never told me. I had to figure it out for myself. And when I did, I found out that he was also on Killer One Submarine with Jimmy Carter. He was chasing flying saucers for Project Blue Book. And he was building nuclear missiles when I was born. And so I didn't know any of this about my dad. But here I was already deep into the study. And I did find numerous extraterrestrial connections to Freemasonry. And I find this, most people don't know and most people don't discuss it, but it actually came out through Zechariah Sitchin's work. And regardless of what you think of all of his theories and thoughts, you have to accept this idea that we cannot build Baalbek, Lebanon today. We could not build the Great Pyramids today. So even with all of our technology, we are not as advanced as they were in the ancient past. Now, if you follow Freemasonry and the story of the Ark of the Covenant, which is really what Freemasonry is based around, and you look at the Ark of the Covenant itself being a communication device to God, that they had to hire some strange man called Hiram Abiff in Freemason ritual to build a building to house this weapon of mass destruction given to the Hebrews. Mm-hmm. So this is where Freemasonry comes into the puzzle. What had occurred is King Hiram of Tyre, according to Zechariah Sitchin, and I have yet to find his source, but according to Zechariah Sitchin in the Genesis Revisited and the 12th planet, King Hiram of Tyre was left the planet, much like Ezekiel and Enoch. Mm-hmm. And King Hiram of Tyre is the one that King Solomon hired to bring and build Solomon's temple to house the Ark of the Covenant. Well, lo and behold, if King Hiram of Tyre didn't go off planet, describe what it was like leaving the planet, and then return with this strange man, Hiram Abiff, who in the Bible is known as Hiram the Copper Worker. But within Freemasonry, he's known as the Grand Architect or the First Freemason. Mm-hmm. So right there, you've got your extraterrestrial connection to Freemasonry and how it was established. in controlling the manufacture of civilization on planet Earth.
Yeah, it does seem to tie into all of that. I went to one meeting, not with my dad, but with another friend of mine who was being initiated. And, you know, I guess he had a sword and was given a cape or something. And it was like a bunch of mumbo jumbo. And that's all I remember because I was a little kid.
Well, that's what a lot of them think it is. You know, they go through these rites and rituals, and they learn words like Shibboleth and Boaz and Jachin, and they don't really know. You know, you ask a Mason, who's the king of the world, and they'll tell you Tubal-Cain. But they don't really understand their own roots. And if they were to go and open up Morals and Dogma by Albert Pike, who was the 33rd degree Grand Sovereign Commander back in the creation of the Scottish Rite Freemasonry, he lists Eliphas Levi and the Kabbalah in Morals and Dogma well over 70 times. So then you get to understand and establish the fact that Freemasonry is based on an ancient Hebrew mysticism or magic, and also includes the works of Eliphas Levi, who is the man who drew that Baphomet picture that everyone says is Satan. So when my father was worshipful master, he told me, well, I really prefer the York Rite of Freemasonry as opposed to the Scottish Rite of Freemasonry because there's so much gobbledygook I have to memorize for these 32 degrees. So, yeah, most Masons aren't willing to open up Morals and Dogma and then after a reading of Morals and Dogma, go and study Aleister Crowley, Eliphas Levi, get into the OTO and some of the other magical bodies and magical orders that are, you know, outwardly connected with Freemasonry. But there are those that do, and those are the ones that tend to rise up to the top. And my understanding of Freemasonry and their rituals came through a decipherment of corporate logos. And what a strange place for me to find all my answers. But I found their entire ritual displayed in McDonald's, at Target, at Walmart. And these symbols then began to take on signs and meaning. And I started to use these symbolic gestures, not only from corporate logos, but from statements from political figures or events such as the piracy of the Sirius Star, which is the star that the Freemasons worship. So if I see a news article that says piracy of the Sirius Star, me and every other Freemason, and most like OTO and others, are clued in. We're like, oh, here's a code. And, of course, every nation in the world showed up for that Sirius Star piracy down in Yemen in the Gulf of Aden, where we had that strange magnetic anomaly and where the Ethiopian minister was saying that they were housing the Ark of the Covenant. And, of course, this is where Cain was also buried, and this all ties straight into the Freemasonic logos.
Yeah, that was interesting. I don't know whatever came of that, but there definitely was some kind of a major a vortex or magnetic anomaly that was happening there. And I know that ties into some prophecies. Now, you know, it's kind of, there's a prophecy, I guess, that there's some being actually rises out of the ocean there. And they go to war with this being, then he retreats to the mountains, and then they all come to war against him in the mountains, and he just basically waves his hand or something, and they all just, you know, get toasted, and it's the end of the big battle. So, you know, I thought it was interesting, all of a sudden this big vortex is opening up, and I was going, whoa, it's going to be interesting. Some being comes out of that vortex and fulfills that prophecy.
Well, strangely enough, Anton LaVey of the Church of Satan said that one of the best places for you to call upon these old ones and to bring Leviathan or Coronazone back to the surface was from an oil rig. And so really, you know, it's like South Park has some inside knowledge in calling through the BP oil spill.
Yeah. Yeah, that seemed pretty satanic, you know, I would have to admit. You know, some of the crazy stuff going on there is just unbelievable. I you know, I've been watching things unfold now, and you look at what the international banksters did, and you look at the Gulf oil spill, and you look at all the other oil spills they're not even talking about, and then there's another huge methane spill going on. I'm trying to remember where this is, and they're just hoping it doesn't get ignited, a giant bubble under there. I think it's Oh, so I'm trying to think of where that was. I can't remember. I'll have to look it up again. But, I look at all the things, the fracking and everything else they're doing and the HARP and everything else. And you're going, what kind of lunatics are in control here? And where are they taking us?
And why don't they care? That is a huge question. People ask that about chemtrails all the time. Why would they not be concerned about their own families and their own well-being? Why would they spray aluminum and barium over everyone? Why would they be doing all of these if they intend on establishing a new world order that they plan on having going for millennia, right? Well, I believe the solution and the answer to that question lies in the transhumanist agenda. Because we start to see now where they're setting themselves up for immortality in two main ways, in clones and drones. And so right now on the International Space Station, along with a piece of the True Cross, according to the Russian who's holding it, on the International Space Station currently is six adult stem cells that are going to be used to find longevity for humanity. Mostly, they say for the astronauts that suffer from the zero G aging process. But yet, they're not doing this just for astronauts. So they have these stem cells up there on the space station sitting alongside Robonaut 2, who is a telepresence robot. And so a telepresence robot is the robot with the ability to have your mind transferred into it, and you can interact and work on the space station from another location. And so now we're looking right there on the International Space Station, the two prime factors for longevity, being a mind transfer technology and human cloning with mind transfer technology. I started to follow this puzzle, and of course, I found the Blue Brain Project, which is the first outward mind transfer technology company out there. And they had come out in Russia and the newspaper Pravda saying that they were going to be able to transmit your soul via radio frequency waves to another planet, to a robot on the bottom of the ocean, or hopefully in the future to a cloned body of yourself. Now, what is happening is that the Blue Brain Project and the manufacturer of a human mind, which they use neuron transmitters, they requires exabytes of information. Now, it is said that all words written would fit into 5 exabytes of information. But in order to clone a human mind, a computer has to be pushing exabytes of information. And the Blue Brain Project has not been able to get their standard up to that yet. They're working towards it. But the one computer that is capable of this at this moment is the LHC grid, or the CERN's Large Hadron Collider grid computer, which is 140,000 up to 200,000 interlock computers using dedicated fiber optic lines that are synced together using Xeon computers, and they are capable of pushing exabytes of information. So CERN might have lots more to do than just looking for the God particle. It might have everything to do with this new mind transfer technologies. And so maybe that's why they are not so concerned, not to mention Elon Musk planning to retire on Mars, So they are also forward to just moving to another planet.
Yeah. I just did an interview, and I guess it's going to air next week with Courtney Brown, and he talked about, there's these like igloo type structures with nozzles with something pouring out of these nozzles on Mars and other major facilities there and things of that nature. I wonder if you've looked into those and know anything about the like who's in there and what their agenda is.
Well, the curious note for me was more the Phobos missions and the announcement of further Phobos missions. So it seemed more as if there was a base inside of Phobos. And of course, we've sent out 6 Phobos missions between us and the Russians. And Phobos 2, being the last of the Russian missions to go, was vanished. Now, all missions to Phobos have vanished. But the Phobos 2 by the Russians happened to take a picture of a 14-mile-long cigar-shaped craft. And so then Maria Povich of the Cosmodrome of the Russian Space Agency came out publicly saying, look, here's this 14-mile-long craft that we filmed after losing or right before losing the satellite going into Phobos. Mm-hmm. So flash forward to today, and we had the Marsis program, and they sent out the Mars Observer, the Marsis. I'm trying to remember what the name of the camera was offhand, but this I found very curious because what happened was they sent the satellite out to Phobos, and then this was just after Buzz Aldrin was announcing the monolith on the moon of Phobos. Mm-hmm. And so then this satellite was put into silent running, much like you would do with a submarine in a military war situation. And they shut the satellite completely down to use tomography to see inside of Phobos, which they found to be mostly hollow. And they even said that they would not be able to use their cameras on the satellite on this pass to get pictures of the monolith because they didn't want to even use a clicking sound of their digital cameras, which I thought that was kind of fishy.
Yeah. That's yeah, go ahead.
Well, Mars's moons Phobos and Deimos did not appear until, oh gosh, I lost the date now. 14. Oh man, this was hardwired in my brain forever and ever. But Mars's moons weren't there. They were never reported. The only time they ever came up in historical content was actually the fictional novel of Gulliver's Travels, which identified moons of Mars. But there was never a report in 100 years of having telescopes of moons on Mars until suddenly, I think it was 1844, they suddenly appeared. And this was also the same year that Theosophy came into fruition. But suddenly everyone saw these two moons of Mars. And so that's a pretty interesting story of these moons. And now we have the lander that just went up there, Curiosity, which was $3.5 million we spent to send another rover up to Mars. But this one's about the size of a Mini Cooper. And it's running on plutonium because they decided that solar panels weren't the way to go anymore. So now this thing is a nuke waiting to happen. Mm-hmm. And it's rolling around there on Mars right now, sending pictures, which some have said were colored. And then we've also got false pictures that seem to be pictures of Egypt that have been colored red and passed off as the Mars pictures. I have, I've spoken with Andrew Basago, who said that there were already humans on Mars. He told me what life on Mars was like. I remember when the technician phoned in from NASA to Coast and was saying that they had to turn all the hues on the receivers to red because Mars actually had a blue atmosphere. Mm-hmm. We see clouds now. We can see the terraforming going on. And if Elon Musk is already talking about it, if Iran and Dubai are already talking about, I didn't mean Iran, but Dubai was sending space missions up, getting ready to take over. You know, there's something going on there on Mars, but I can't. So.
Well, it seems like to me, like from my understanding, delving into the Black Projects, that we've been able to go back and forth to Mars back in the days of Hitler, basically. You know, they had that technology, and we've taken a lot further since then, so. So Mars would just be a hop, skip, and a jump, you know, to go back and forth to Mars. Obviously, the moon, there's bases on the moon as well, and the moon seems to be an artificial planet. I don't know if you've looked into that.
Well, there again, another interesting study. Why did we bomb the moon? Yeah. We this kinetic weapon crashing into the moon. Now, they had said that this was to discover water. They had said that they wanted to, NASA said that they wanted to scrape the surface so that they could see under the debris, get a deeper look, and also so they get the plume, which didn't happen, of course, when it crashed. Mm-hmm. No plume. And so they couldn't do the spectrometer on there to see whether or not what the pieces of the moon were. But the curious note here was that India had already sent up their Chandrayaan-1, and it discovered water on Mars or on the moon. So the Chandrayaan-1 already confirmed water on the moon. That was months before the LaCrosse was launched. And then we had the Japanese, the Kyuga, which had another name as well, was sent up there, and it crashed into the surface of the moon to do exactly what they were saying they were going to do with the LaCrosse, which was to see inside, you know, under the surface. So we already had these two experiments already done, already open science months before the LaCrosse ever launched. But why would they bomb the moon? Why would they crash this kinetic weapon into the moon like a giant bullet? And it is my opinion that they were using HAARP or another ionospheric heater because they have the capability of tomography. They can see inside of things, but of course you have to make it ring out like a gong first. So if you've seen Jurassic Park, they pound the ground with that explosion and then they get the image of the dinosaur underground. Same thing. They hit the moon, rang out like a gong, as the astronauts have reported, and then used a HAARP-type technology, an ionospheric heater, to see inside of the moon using the LaCrosse mission.
Yeah, I wonder what they came up with. You know, I know people from some people from NASA have come up here, and you know, I've asked them the hard question, and they get quiet. You know, they get really quiet, and a lot of times they go, "How'd you know about that?" You know, but they won't tell me anything. You know, they go, "How'd you know?" You know, they think everything's secret, you know, that all their secrets are held. And I guess they are to most of the mainstream. But, you know, it's quite interesting how, you know, they have their own investigative group. Wherever there's UFO activity, they send their people out. If there's a crash site, they're there in moments. You know, but we're not hearing about any of this stuff. All we're seeing them is launching up these giant firecrackers and strapping a few astronauts to it and hoping it doesn't blow up.
Right. And now we have many new roboticized spacecraft going up there, like the X-37B, which had to come down. I say had to because we had those massive solar flares that occurred that weekend. And the one just prior to the weekend the X-37B came down was the highest light frequency ever reported out of a solar flare. So now here was the X-37B flying out there. It had been out there 14 months already. And these things were only scheduled and only designed to last or to be in space 7 months, 6 to 7 months. They pushed it an extra. And, of course, they had a top secret payload that they you know, no one knew anything about. But this is a robot. This is a drone spacecraft that's out there. They have two of them, right? X-37. And so this was brought back down to Earth right as that solar flare was striking the Earth. So we have these going on, and it's very much like Battlestar Galactica if you start to get into this puzzle with Robonaut 2 sitting up on the space station waiting for a mind. And then you have the X-37Bs, you have the HTV-2s, and you have the Boeing stealth I forgot the name of that one as well. These winged, you know, robotic craft that are flying around, and no one seems to really be noticing or caring about this situation. I was leading that somewhere else, James, and I lost my train of thought.
Okay, yeah, well, we're just talking about some of the back engineering things going on and the stuff we're sending back and forth to space. But, you know, it seems like, you know, it's very obvious that we have anti-gravity. It's very obvious that we have counter-gravity. You know, it's very obvious that we have fuelless energy. You know, all of these things, you know, I know for sure. I've actually held some of it in my hand. I know people that have invented it and back-engineered it, and they're waiting for the right time to bring these things out. But, you know, the powers that be are not allowing this. But it's just you think about, again, I want to ask, like, who are these people? I mean, we're going to need these technologies to get through the changes, and we're definitely, the old technologies aren't going to work after the changes, so we're going to have to bring something else in. And it just makes no sense at all that these technologies are not, you know, hitting daylight and starting to come into fruition.
Right. And let me add to a little confirmation for that. I have a section on FreemanTV.com called Space War News. And this was my plan. Was I started it with the moment Barack Obama said, "I will not weaponize space," and that's the first article. And then I covered the whole spectrum until we weaponize space. So, you know, leading up to the X-37B, the bombing of the moon, the Norway spiral, all of these things are in my space war news. Now, to confirm what you're saying, NASA has announced their gravity tractor, which was one of their solutions for the incoming asteroid. Also have announced the SpaceX plan for, or I'm sorry, the, what do they call it? The X Prize for the gravity or the space elevator. So these are two open things that they've already discussed on NASA openly, that there is a gravity tractor and there are space elevators. So if anyone wants to start saying this is all freaky deaky, you can go straight to NASA and find out that they're well upon all of this. So my Space War News will really keep you on top of all of these things, because I follow everything. I've been on top of a number of the events, like the Norway spiral. I was discussing the technology before it happened in Norway, because we had a launch here in America that they called the Cloud of Care, or the Charged Aerosol Release Experiment. And they launched a rocket out of Wallops Flight Facility, which is also known as Mars, the Mid-Atlantic Regional Spaceport. And they launched a rocket up out of there that then deployed a aluminum oxide cloud. Now, aluminum oxide is the base element for sapphires. They released this at the height of the International Space Station, about 180 miles to 200 miles up. And then it looked like a giant vortex opened in the night sky and then sucked itself back up. Now, what was interesting about this is you could watch the launch live on FreemanTV.com, but the news, when they reported on it, said, "Well, it must have been aliens, because none of our experts know anything about what this thing was." Now, this was a Norway spiral, quote unquote, in America. Then it was another month later when the Norway spiral happened. But we had one in America. There was one in China. There was one in Russia. This has been a technology that they are attempting to work with. Now, this all ties in with what I'm talking about here in alternate dimensions, the anti-universe, and everything else. Because what we see now with the aluminum oxide and sapphires being broken down into particles, then emitted out, what we saw at the Norway event was then it was pulsed by their ionospheric heater there in Tromsø, the ISCAT antenna array. They use that to pulse this thing. Now, what they are trying to do, I'm not exactly certain, but I'm tracking the puzzle pieces. And so what I have found is that, first of all, CERN is punching a hole into the other dimension. That is their plan. That's the design. It's openly spoken by Sergio, lead CERN scientist. Yes, we are going to open a door, but we need to have antimatter or exotic matter to keep the wormhole open. So they have said this, and I have just written an in-depth article. Be on the lookout for that from Paranoia Magazine, coming out today, actually. So I have an interest in all of this. What we see now, okay, so in going code signs and symbols, as I said, I went through all the different corporate logos, and I could decipher them all within Masonic ritual. There's a reason for the square. There's a reason for Target's Target. There's a reason for the golden arches of McDonald's. I can prove to you that each of the founders of these corporations have been members of the Freemasonic order. I've gone to all of the temples. I've taken pictures of each of those people: Sam Walton of Walmart, Roy Kroc of McDonald's, the founder Saunderson of RCA, and all of these people. And I've tracked and categorized all of their corporate logos. But when I got to Phillips, Prince Phillips gas station in Phillips 66, I was left, what do I do with this 66? Well, so knowing Albert Pike had out as Kabbalism, I simply went to the gematria, or the numerology of the Kabbalah, and I looked up 66. You know, it seems simple enough. And sure enough, there it was. The 66 is what's known as the Clefot in magic, or known as the fallen angels to the rest of us. It's Samael, Lilith, Azrael, all of the fallen angels listed by the Book of Enoch. Now, so here we have Phillips 66 standing proud. Well, then I converted that to Hebrew, I wanted to see, you know, how does this fall in Hebrew? And in Hebrew, V is six. So six is V. It's not like Roman. In Hebrew, six is V. So then I realized, okay, VV is also the same symbolism. I realized that Adolf Hitler, a practicing theosophist, well into capitalism, trying to remove all other magicians out of his way. This is why he crucified Freemasons. He crucified Kabbalists and Hebrews. Any magicians that would stand in his way, he removed from his system. But all of his members, the Thule, the SS, they were all Freemasons. They were all of the esoteric orders. They were AA and OTO and members of other orders inside Skull and Bones and things. So they were all practicing magicians. And Hitler came out with his Volkswagen, which was the car of the people, and he was going to give this out for all of the, you know, the people. And of course, he put the V symbolism on there again, or the fallen angels. But when he put these two V's together, he crossed the V's, making a third V being 666. So every Volkswagen logo actually has 666 in Hebrew on it. Now, if you wanted to see what 666 looked like in Hebrew, go look at your Monster power drink. Those three slashes are three Hebrew V's, or 666. In English, the letters F-O-X make out 666, and that's why you've got Fox and Firefox and Lucius Fox and Mulder Fox and all of the Foxes, why you see Fox here, Fox there. This is 666 from their symbolism. But 66 was a different puzzle, and what I found was this was the symbol of the alternate dimension, or the hidden Sephirah in Kabbalism, what they call Da'ath, and it is the hidden Sephirah where Corona's own Leviathan or Cthulhu exist, right? And you have to make it over this abyss, as they call it, to get to heaven. And so the straight path of the G, which is the Freemasonic G inside of the compass of square, the straight path on the Tree of Life is Gimel, the tree, or Camel, why you have Camel cigarette packs. The G leads you straight through the abyss to heaven. But you, first of all, you have to get past the 66, the abyss. So now, as we start to see this get displayed throughout the world stage, take it to a couple of different symbolisms. When you look at V for Vendetta or the Matrix, these were put out, and their symbolism is six Vs. When you look to Fringe, the science fiction HBO show, Fringe was on HBO. Wherever it was, Fringe, you know it. The thing was dealing with an alternate dimension, and in their alternate dimension, they had the symbol of FF, which of course is 66 again. Now, when Madonna did her Super Bowl display, when she came out on stage all dressed up in these ancient ritual garbs, basically looking like a Baphomet, she had the MA on stage, which is going back to this mitochondrial DNA and the idea of the transmission of souls. And also, she has her own DNA sleeper team that clears out any room that she's been in of her DNA. But when she came out on stage, she was standing on two symbols. One was the VV, which was the 66 in Hebrew, and the other one was the OX, which, of course, is the 66 in English. And if you go back to the Satanist again, and you check in with one of the accolades of Aleister Crowley, you find that Kenneth Grant shows you that the OX symbolism is the mark of the beast. And this is according to the Satanists. So there is Madonna standing on the 66, the OX, the VV. And then in the Olympics, they had all of these balloons count down to the Olympics beginning. So they had a batch of nines and they all exploded. They had a batch of eights and they all exploded until they got to the six, and every balloon exploded except for two sixes. So now we were down to a 66 symbolism in the Olympics. Okay, so this 66 symbolism is the fallen angels, the alternate dimension. So now we have CERN with their Large Hadron Collider grid, the Large Hadron Collider, of course, at in the King of Atlantis and Alice through the looking glass, are punching the hole in the other dimension, while the LHC grid, the supercomputer, has the capability of transmitting your soul via radio frequency waves through it, or vice versa, bringing something back in. And so all of this ties together. It's shown to us in our science fiction, and then it's shown to us in our science faction and in our space faction.
So do you think they're using this technology to actually bring in these fallen angels or just project certain beings there to that world, or both? I don't know.
I think they're working towards that. Now, right after I'm done with you, James, here at the E-SETI Ranch, we will be going to meet with the High Priest of the Church of Satan, Rex Diabolus Church. Mm-hmm. And he is building a mimetic device, a massive big ring with orgone mist and I'm not sure what else, to open that same portal. He plans on doing this from Mount Shasta. Or in near Portland, where they seem to have another Stonehenge. And mm-hmm. he wants this device there on December 21st, 2012, and open this portal for the old ones to enter, which he expects to take out the New World Order, because this Satanist is opposed to that type of thinking. I've given you the full report on that in the coming weeks.
Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of interesting. The Satanists is warring on each other. I know whenever you're after any kind of control or domination or whatever, you know, or warring over power, it's pretty hard to unify, you know, to come together. And there's always somebody that wanting to step into that power. I'm wondering how this all aligns with, you know, this ninth wave of unity consciousness going through. You know, how are these people going to function in that energy, you know, running all these polarity games and power games and separation games?
It is falling apart, James. There's no doubt about this. I just interviewed an insider from the Supreme Council of the 33rd. He was from the Supreme Council of Dallas. And him and another Mason, Frater X, as we call him, they have both come out on my show showing the internal struggle, because what is happening is that many of these brethren are believing that their teachings should be made public. And most of their teachings already are. You can go find the Masonic rituals. You can get Duncan's rituals and study. I've studied them all. But yet there's this openness that is coming now, and it's just bubbling to the surface, and it really is causing a massive divide between the different rites inside of Freemasonry. So I have that interview right now on the front page of FreemanTV.com. And it was astounding. I mean, I learned about them using necromancy, dead bodies in the rituals of the 33rd, and I'm not sure if that happens in almost every lodge, because I know when they cleared out the lodge in Lawrence, Kansas, they found a mummy in there. And now the curious thing about Freemasonry is that most of their worship does go back to the Aten, and it does go back to Akhenaten. And I don't know where of my belief and my proof that Barack Obama is a clone of Akhenaten, and it's not simply him, but his entire family. Mm-hmm. And I've proven this as conclusive as anyone could without actually having Barack's own DNA, and of course his birth certificate.
It's really, you look at the history and you do the major investigation, and you go, who is this guy and where did he come from? And his whole life seems to be fabricated. It doesn't make any sense whatsoever. But I tell you one thing I was fascinated by, and we talked a little bit about this, is that these photographs kept showing up all over the internet about these huge scars, like he had some major brain surgery or something. And I've heard people try to discount it. But all of a sudden it was on one side, and then the next day or next whatever, 2 weeks later, he's got another scar on the other side of his head, you know. You can't believe anything you see on the internet, everything. But I just thought that was fascinating. God, you know, who is this guy? You know, are they reworking, you know, putting a new brain in there because the other one didn't work so well, or what are they doing there? It's just, how far down that rabbit hole do we want to go?
Well, really, and would you want to go as far as I have on? I don't know. I came out and I realized the how much Barack Obama looked like Akhenaten, and yeah. Akhenaten is believed by Freud to be Moses, and by Jung to be Moses. So You know, we're back to the Ark of the Covenant tale. We're back to the worship of Freemasonry. And if the Freemasons could ever bring anyone back, it would be Akhenaten. If they had the ability, they would do it. Now, what had happened was the Rosicrucians, they are founded by Akhenaten. You can find this in their ancient books. There's one that's called Unto Thee I Grant. And when you find out, when you're reading through it, it's actually a book of Akhenaten's poetry that was found in Tibet. So now Akhenaten was their very man. Akhenaten was also the first ancient alien, of course, to most people, because here was this strange man with a cone head, what they said was Marfan syndrome, because he looked both male and female, or hermaphrodite. And he brought about the most realistic artistic display Egypt had ever seen, and yet here he is depicted with a cone head, along with his daughters and well, Nefertiti, she never really showed off her cone head. But... So here we have Akhenaten with the great puzzle pieces of where he came from, why he flipped Egypt on its head, why he went from polytheistic religion, taking it down to monotheism, saying everybody just worship the sun. And then, of course, you have Barack Obama with his solar symbolism. But once I realized how much Barack Obama looked like Akhenaten, I split their faces, and they are identical. But then I realized, oh my God, Akhenaten's mother, Queen Tee, who was the true powerhouse behind Akhenaten, because Akhenaten was a child as he was brought in as a pharaoh. His mother, Queen Tee, was the true ruler at the time, is Michelle Obama. There's absolutely, you can't even tell I split their faces. You take Michelle Obama's high school photo and you take a picture of Akhenaten's mother, Queen Tee, and you tell me they are not the same person. Then, as we were going through Akhenaten's realistic artwork, we find out that he had two daughters that became co-regents with him. Now, he had six daughters, but two that became co-regents or co-pharaohs, and they are Leia and Sasha to a Tee. To a T. There's no discrepancy here. They are exact, not just similar. Then they were given the code names by the Secret Service, and Akhenaten or Barakhenaten was called Renegade. Well, that's what they called Akhenaten, the Renegade Pharaoh, which of course means an apostate, one that turns on his people and religion, one that cannot be trusted and will turn on his own political party. That is the meaning. The word renegade, which the Secret Service call Barack Obama. Then you've got Michelle, who is Renaissance, who is rebirth, regeneration, brought back to life. And then the two daughters, Malaya and Sasha, were Radiance and Rosebuds. And Radiance of the Aten and Rosebuds in their hands are the only other two features in the stela of Akhenaten with Nefertiti and their children. Okay, so those all fit into the puzzle pieces. But then I had this one thing. Now, in 1985, Nature Magazine announced, yes, we can clone mummies. There is a mysterious property to mummification that we cannot understand, but it saves a viable cell for cloning. And Nature Magazine and the Wall Street Journal both reported on the fact that they had cloned a mummy from 3,500 years ago, which went right back to Akhenaten's period. Now, the problem was I could not prove that they had Akhenaten's DNA. Now, this was what was happening. I was already, deep into this story. I had actually already given a lecture on it. I had already been on London television talking about it. And I kept saying, well, the one puzzle piece I'm missing here is, of course, Akhenaten's DNA. Well, lo and behold, if after Barack Obama went and met with Zahi Hawass, and who was later fired for sexual advances and taking bribes for archaeological digs, Zahi Hawass and Barack over there at the pyramids made jokes about how much he looked like King Tut, which, of course, was Akhenaten's son. And then they made jokes. Barack was saying, look, that looks like me. But I got an insider report saying that Barack Obama, now this was Obama's aide that wrote me, saying that she was really confused why Rahm Emanuel would not let Barack take a picture in front of the stela or the statue of Akhenaten. And she thought this was the strangest thing until she came across Freeman TV. Okay. It's out because it was saying all of this was true. I believe it wholeheartedly. I know that it's possible. It's not. It's right there in Nature magazine. That's a prestigious magazine. They're not flakes. And it was scientifically proven in the 80s that we can clone mummies. Well, lo and behold, if all of a sudden Hawass announces, hey, I just built this billion-dollar DNA lab underneath the Cairo Museum, and the first thing we're going to do with it is test who is King Tut's daddy. And I said, oh, you are you? Okay, well, all right, let's lay it out there. And sure enough, on the Discovery Channel, they show you the DNA strip that they are testing against King Tut, which was the KV-55 mummy. And the KV-55 mummy is the one that has been disputed for 120 years as to being Akhenaten. Now, what had happened was they had to break back into this tomb. So it was sealed. It was hermetically sealed. But when they got inside, they found Akhenaten's tomb, which they thought was Akhenaten's tomb, completely decimated, and all words saying Akhenaten were destroyed. But they found Queen T's toilet in there. They found a few other items of theirs. They found the daughter's canopic jars. They found enough to say, we think this is Akhenaten. But they had one doctor look at the body, and he said, well, that's a male. And then they sent it to another doctor, and he said, no, this is a female. And so this whole mystery bounced around for 120 years, the KV-55 mummy mystery. But lo and behold, if Zahi Hawass didn't come out and say, oh, by the way, this was actually Akhenaten, and we knew this all along, but it was a national security secret. And if you don't believe me, I have the article right there on my website. So now, all of a sudden, they're announcing, hey, guess what? We do have Akhenaten's DNA, and we have Queen T's DNA, and we have Malaya and Sasha, which would be Aksunamon and Maritza Ten, the two daughters of Akhenaten. So now we have the DNA. Now we have the cloning possibilities. We have a DNA lab in the middle of the situation. We have the code names. And then everybody, of course, saying, well, what about Akhenaten's cone head? And I said, well, you've heard of designer babies, right? I mean, the Vatican and Pope has come out about designer babies being the next worst thing to happen to humanity. And lo and behold, if, you know, all of a sudden the article on the head scars came out. So I propose perhaps they needed to remove the cone head off of Akhenaten.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting that the cone heads are, I guess they're the Anunnaki. They're the ancient Anunnaki. And a lot of people, you know, they worship this image of a bearded god. And I've always told people that's they got the image from the Anunnaki. And we can, you know, tie that back, you know, go throughout history and tell people where you got this. But, you know, to me, I always go, okay, so you've got this image of this bearded god that everybody is praying to, but you know, who created that? You know, where did that entity come from?
Right. And curiously, in Zechariah Sitchin's work, he proposes that in the first book, in Genesis Revisited, that the Anunnaki were a separate race brought by the gods, or the Elohim, that they were a genetically crafted race that were brought to mine the planet, and that these Anunnaki revolted against the Elohim, which resulted in the creation of the Lulu. Now, another curious note, of course, you've seen Lulu.com, you've seen Hulu, who admittedly say that they are eating your brains, that they're aliens and eating your brains, and then the there's Lulu chocolate, there's Lulu. Start looking into the Lulu. And I've actually found in the Shriners, they have their fezes that say Lulu, along with Isis and a few others. But now the Lulu were a genetically crafted race of humans that were then replacing the Anunnaki. And I personally believe that, according to this concept, that the Anunnaki were actually the Greys, that the Elohim brought the Anunnaki, the Greys, to mine this planet, and they were ant people. And these people were able to bury down enough and finally revolt against their masters when their masters couldn't do anything. And this resulted in the creation of the Lulu, which was the first generation of mankind, which was unable to reproduce. And then later they created the Homo sapien through the crossbreeding program, and that created the first producing humans, which I believe is the story of Adam and Eve, because when you look at Adam and Eve, it's nothing but genetics of this one couple. You know, that's the Bible. So,
but what have you followed Michael Tellinger's work?
A little bit. But the Hopi Anasazi, of course, and that's just one letter off from Anunnaki. So,
yeah, he seems to have found the landing place of the Anunnaki, their first major colony or whatever. And I guess I don't know if it's the House of Enki or Enlil or one of those guys, But he's, you know, really actually validating a lot of the ancient information and about the gold mines, and you know, all of that information seems to be coming out now. I'm just curious, you know, because when I see the depictions of the Anunnaki, they seem to be very, or some of these beings, they seem to be very tall, and they have big beards, and they wear those cone heads. You know, they wear those things on top of their head, probably to disguise their head. You know, those you know, strange headdresses, and I've always felt that that's where we got our image of the bearded gods, because these were bearded gods and there were definitely cone heads.
Deformed.
Yeah. Some did, you know, it's like, now it goes back to now I'm really curious about now Isis and Osiris. They called them the wing gods, and they seem to have the ability to bilocate and fly and do all kinds of things. I'm wondering, have you tracked down their origins and their, who they were?
Well, what we found was that it seems that the elite are channeling the nine gods of ancient Egypt, the Ennead, which is Osiris, Isis, Nephthys, Geb, you know, the whole list there. If you actually, the one place you could get that whole list is in Steven Spielberg's Prince of Egypt, where Steve Martin sings about these gods, and I have a show called The Hidden God with Aleister Crowley, and so you could get these because Spielberg, you know, in that movie also had the Norway Spiral, which was the Angel of Death movie, and we find a lot of this coming out into these pieces. So what I learned was mostly through Lynn Picnic and Clive Prince in the Stargate Conspiracy, very good book, but needs to be dug deeper, is that the Aster, Gene Roddenberry, many of the elite were in a group that were channeling the Archons or the Ennead, the nine gods of Egypt, and that this is where they were getting most of their plans and information from, and that they were then seeding this into our mental stream by like the nine members of Stargate's Star Trek's Next Generation, or Seven of Nine, playing upon that. You'll find many movies playing on the nine and the nine symbolism. And so they are channeling these nine gods of Egypt. I have no doubt about that, because everything that I find plays into this puzzle. And I want to get deeper into understanding what they're getting out of the nine. It was, of course, started by the remote viewers and Puharik. And back at SRI, back at Stanford Research Institute, which I just came from there, that they were channeling and remote viewing to contact these beings.
Now, I've always heard this group of nine, you know, and people ask me, you know, who's the, you know, are you working with a group of nine? And in a real negative way, you know, challenging kind of, and I've heard this over and over again. I've always had just my gut feeling did not feel good, you know, about this, you know, channeling coming through all the time with, I'm channeling the group of nine, you know, or nine this, nine that. And it kind of makes sense. But what's interesting is that if in meditation, if I plug it into like Isis or Osiris, I feel a real loving energy. I feel a real positive energy, you know, coming from that connection, which I think is interesting.
They later identified themselves as a sentient computer known as Spectra. Now, this was when Uri Geller had come in and started to take over the puzzle. Uri Geller said that he was the main channeler for the Nine for a long time, and he had said that they were pranksters, that they you know, never to trust them. But they told him that they were actually a sentient computer from a spacecraft known as Spectra.
Mm-hmm. Now, what would Spectrum be?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. But we're really getting close to that same place now where we're going to have sentient computers. And, you know, that's a scary place to be, especially when everybody's geared toward zeitgeist-type thinking and giving over the world to a supercomputer.
Yeah, it, you know, it is getting pretty insane right now. It's between the hidden technology and we're 100 to even further years behind, you know, the hidden technology. of what we know and what we see. I know they have biological computers now, and they have, as I said, they have anti-gravity, counter-gravity, you know, fuelless energy. They have all those things on the planet right now, and they're just leaking out little bits and pieces, you know, over time. And you know, it seems like we're at least 50 to 100 years behind. Mainstream is about that far behind what's in the Black Projects. But, you know, who's to say, you know, some being could be coming back from the future that is totally synthetic and coming back and plugging in and doing all kinds of crazy stuff. And we would revere them as these as godlike beings or whatever. We wouldn't know, you know, really what their agenda was unless we had some extreme discernment going.
Absolutely not. And, you know, none of us are really looking forward to a new world order.
Yeah. My old gut feeling is I think that the Earth has an agenda. She has her own program going, and the higher dimensional beings have an agenda, and the new world order just doesn't fit. You know, they're not frequency specific to where this evolutionary path is going. And so they are going to fold in on themselves, and it just has to do with frequency and consciousness. And you know, you if you're not going to align with unity consciousness, and if you don't have the emotions to match the new frequencies to move up there, you're just not going to make it. And I think that's why everybody's scrambling right now. You know, all these mega corporations are their frequencies are so low. They're just based on you know, absorption and greed and you know, they're soulless basically, and they're all consuming. You know, they're not going to function, you know, going into the future. The people that run them aren't going to function. I just don't see how any of this system we have now is going to be able to function, considering where the Earth is going in her evolutionary process.
Yeah, imagine if we were all psychic suddenly. None of their stuff would work anymore. It would fall right through in that 1 minute. And I totally agree with you. And the issue that we have here is that we're looking at this biosystem and we're seeing the miraculous. So I am now on what I call the friendship agenda, and I'm on a completely synchronistic path, just traveling around in my school bus, going from place to place, trying to show people that if there was a collapse, if things did melt down, don't worry, there are welcoming arms everywhere. And so we basically collapsed because I decided to be altruistic with my radio show and give everything away for free. And so now we're homeless, of course. And yet I decided to use that to be a personal example and show everybody the miraculous in existence. Now, this is very difficult because, as you and I talked about, without the personal experience of this synchronicity, without it actually affecting, you know, like God just stepped into your life, handed you exactly what you needed, maybe not what you wanted, but exactly what you needed, and you didn't even know you needed it, and it came to you in such a miraculous fashion that you got goosebumps and you knew that this was something beyond just your standard life example. That, you know, I've had this happen to me in so many different ways where I was just guided to the right place at the right time and everything worked out. Well, that's why I'm talking to you now, really. I mean, it was all synchronicity that put me up here. So it was my goal at this point to try and show people this, to that synchronicity, that the world is alive, that the God force is working within your life, but yet everything around you is there to deter you from your true soul's purpose. So everything in Hollywood, everything in programming, all of the news and everything else was there to misdirect you away from your true spiritual goal. And we're hoping to be an example of the buffer, an example of don't panic, it's okay. You know, everything can fall apart, but humanity will still hold together because they're giving us every example of the opposite.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that. I know when I had my own near-death experience, it was such a transition from, you know, being in commercial real estate and having my own office and all these people working on with me, you know, the being a board of director on the Chamber of Commerce, all that stuff from BAM, almost like seeing energy fields around everything, watching things materialize, dematerialize, and having trouble staying grounded in this world, you know, seeing entities, seeing all these things, and just went from one place to the other. And I couldn't live in that world anymore. And I just gave away most everything and moved. And it seemed like as long as I trusted and aligned myself with my soul purpose, there was never any problem. Everything manifested. Everything kept coming back to me bigger and bigger and bigger. And even though I wasn't trying to manifest this stuff, I was trying to live simple and trying to you know, take the time for the spiritual practices, you know, it just kept coming, you know, it's like you're saying, the synchronicity, and I think when you're aligned with your soul purpose, everything does manifest. It just comes, but the real struggle is trying to hang on to the status quo and trying to hang on to your old programs and your old, you know, wants and desires, you know, versus knowing that the universe will provide everything you need once you get into that alignment.
Yeah, see, I bring newbies out with me every time, people that have never experienced travel, and I just bring them out to the middle of the United States and, you know, all right, we're on our own. Where are we going to go now? What's next? We're to the point where we were heading south on 666 and said, that's probably a bad idea, and turned around and went north, you know, because it really didn't matter where we were going. But I would see what would happen when people felt like they did not have their financial foundations. And so all of a sudden, I would see the panic come into their souls, and they would start to freak out, start to find some way. And I'm like, no, just carry on. Just hold on. Everything's going to go. And I would have to, you know, carry them along saying, watch, I'll take care of you. Don't worry. Everything's going to be fine. And we're so conditioned to believing in this false system of money that we've completely lost touch with the true system of the miraculous and our own connection with life itself. And when you go back to ancient Egypt and you study the very first forms of magic, you have talismans and contracts. These are the first base forms of magic for the ancient Egyptians, which, of course, is money and corporations, neither of which actually exist. And yet everybody feels safe and secure as long as they've got these pentacles or these magical spells in their hands. But yet we know that those could be just turned into ash within seconds and be completely useless, like, you know, in the Zulu or in Zimbabwe, where they're bringing wheelbarrows of bills to buy a loaf of bread. Certainly it just becomes nothing. And then there's the mental triggers as they start to de-engineer money out of the system. So, of course, now all of our bills are actually the exact colors of Monopoly money. So if you look at the 1 and the 20, the 10, you know, they're all the same color as Monopoly money now. This is sociological programming that is starting to engineer this cashless society to make our brains, you know, associate this with play money, and we start to go towards more, well, DNA-oriented money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've noticed that, you know, to me, it's a funny feeling now. I mean, after I had that experience, I give people these little green pieces of paper, and they actually give me tangible objects back, you know. And a lot of times I ask them, I said, do you ever wonder, like, I'm trading you this thing probably worth 2 or 3 cents, you know, for this tangible object, you know, for – you know, parts and plumbing parts and whatever, you know, and you know, I said, do you ever think about this? This is only, I'm giving you 2 cents and you're giving me something back that, you know, that obviously is a big chunk of metal or something like that that's been fabricated and all this work has gone into it and everything else for just for this little 2 cent piece of paper. And, it's so odd when you think about it, and the only value that paper has in it is the belief.
And magical symbols, yeah, the belief and the symbols.
Yeah, yeah, and so it's like it just amazes me when I go out and buy things a lot of times, you know, or I just give them a card and they swipe a card and all of a sudden, you know, miraculously I can walk out with all this stuff, And I didn't give him anything, you know. I just gave him some digits.
Once again, South is right on top of all of that. I swear, Matt and Trey watch my show. I got word that that one of the writers inside of South Park were actually a fan of my show, came from Austin and went to work for them. So maybe I have influenced them. But they did one that was called the Pine Box Derby, where an alien UFO lands on Earth and they kind of leave all of the space money there for the Earthlings to steal.
Oh, yeah.
And then, you know, they steal all the space money and Mexico's building water parks and everybody's building everything. And then the space police show up and say, did you see this guy? He robbed us and we're trying to, you know, and they're all, no, no, no. And so they quarantined Earth by putting it in a giant cube because we still believed in money. But of course, this whole thing began because they stole a particle of antimatter from CERN so to put in their pine. You know?
That's funny. I you know, it's that whole thing just cracks me up, and the, you know, the Gulf oil spill, and then they have the head of the CEO of Gulf oil spill on a bearskin going, I'm sorry, we're sorry, you know, and every time you turn around, they're just totally decimating, you know, an ocean or a planet, and the guy's going, I'm sorry, and you know.
They said that's where you wanted to call Cthulhu. That's where you would do it from. I mean, that's straight from the Church of Satan themselves. So,
yeah. It's pretty interesting. But you know, you look at that, just that whole the way the information they're putting out, and just it's sad. It's sad that a cartoon is actually telling us what's going on, and people haven't figured it out.
I mean, my God, I did not look at that show for so many years because I'm like, that's the degradation of humanity right there. You know, when Married with Children came out on Fox, you know, 666 again for that. And Fox was the beginning of the end of America. And Married with Children was the beginning of the decline of the nuclear family. And it just spread from there. The Simpsons was a little more innocuous, but the same programming, the angry child, the doofus father, you know, the same type of programming that they've been putting out. And Fox brought, you know, degradation down. And then as soon as South Park came out, I was like, oh, my God, this is it. This is the end of the world. You know, poop jokes, whatever.
Yeah.
This is it. Over, folks. And then they started to surprise me with hitting upon every conspiracy theory I had ever talked about. But like I say, it may have been my own influence on South Park that caused this. I'm still waiting for the Barakanaten episode. So if you're listening, Trey.
That may come out. I've always wondered if they're going to end up out here because I know they're kind of into the UFO stuff. But, you know, you never know. We've had all kinds of people come out here and we had Paranormal State out here, and Danny Dyer came out here. I think
they did. Well, I'm just caught up on this because they you know, the most popular play on Broadway right now is South Park's Book of Mormon.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah, number one. Nobody can beat them. When we go back to the Mormons, we find Joseph Smith, a fine Freemason, who decided to make Freemasonry into what he believed it should be. And, of course, Mormonism goes straight to extraterrestrial. They don't even pass go. It's straight there in their belief system that they have these extraterrestrial gods that came to planet Earth and came from the planet Kolob. And then you break this straight into Battlestar Galactica, which is the Mormon creation myth, and it all has happened before, and it'll all happen again. And so there you have another Freemasonic extraterrestrial connection, only far more open about it than the Masons themselves.
Well, it seems like you know, there's some theories that, you know, everything began back in ancient Lyra, you know, and that group were colonizing everywhere. You know, moving everywhere, and then they went from there to the Pleiades and the Hades and Orion system, and from there to Earth, Mars, and Maldek or Melona, depending on which name you want to give it, which is now the asteroid belt. But I think that's just part of the story. I think there's more to that story, and when I look, you know, you just look at the diversity here the genetic diversity in plant, animal, and human life, and you read all the ancient texts and all the ancient stories, you know, there really isn't any one story. It's just where there's this big cosmic soup of star nation tinkering, you know, that has just ended up in where we're at right now. And I think everybody's just watching to see how this ends up unfolding.
Now, if you were to look at the background image on FreemanTV.com, my picture that I have behind everything, I have the doors to Manly P. Hall's library. Now, Manly P. Hall was a third degree Freemason honorary that was brought into Freemasonry because he knew more about it than any of them ever did. And he wrote most of his work at 21. And so they had to bring him in. So there's the Philosophical Research Society there in Los Angeles. And the doors to Manly P. Hall's library, they are said to be Plato and Confucius. But what you'll see is that one is clearly a reptilian. I mean, he has slit eyes, you know, everything reptilian, but he looks like Plato. And then the other one, Confucius, looks like a merman or a mermaid or a fish person. Now, what I found very curious about this, now the reptilian is holding a pine cone, or what we know for the pineal gland, the mental connection. Mission of psychic power. And then the Confucius or the merfolk man is holding a penis staff, which of course is for the reproduction and all of that. So I had begun this study of the merfolk, like back when David Icke was starting to talk about reptiles, I was talking about mermaids and merfolk and sea beings. You know, first UFO was a USO. It wasn't from outer space. It was from under the ocean. You know, the Atlantean stories of the merfolk, the fact that we have webbed fingers and monkeys don't, these type of connections. Well, so I started to make these connections. And of course, as I said, Freemasonry worships the star Sirius, as did Egypt and as a few others, I think even the Mayans. So we had these two races that seemed to come together according to Exopolitics, which was the Syrians and the Alpha Draconians. And according to Exopolitics, the Syrians were high in technology and genetics and reproductive technologies, and the Alpha Draconians, the reptilians, were high warfare and high technologies, and the two could never defeat one another, and so then they combined. Now, you'll find the same story with Enki and Enlil, because Enki was known as the Lord of the Ocean or Lord of the Abyss, Lord of. And then Enlil was the ruler, more reptilian, very direct, whereas Enki was very emotional and kind of loved his creation and stuff. So the story plays out on so many different levels, because then you look to the Pope and the Queen, who are the two main power structures of the planet, and the Pope is dressed up in his Dagon fish hat with his shell on his chest. And he is in charge of high technologies in genetic manipulation, cloning. I don't know if you ever keep up with the Vatican and their Lucifer telescope, their alien ambassadors that they just sent to CERN. So the Vatican had two people come out, the Pope's own meteor curator and head astronomer. Why did his name just leave my brain? And then Benjamin Funes, who was the other astronomer, took over. They both came out about extraterrestrials. Both, I think it was Giovanni. I'll have to read my own article, Paranoia. But so these two Vatican ministers come out, and they both very, you know, come out about extraterrestrials. And then they're the ones that happen to be attached to CERN. Why, out of all these people, would they be the ones attached into the God particle in dealing with CERN? We have this whole connection now where we're seeing these two. So you got the Pope with his fish hat, and then you've got the Queen with her dragon. And of course, the two systems from Alpha Draconis and Sirius are defined exactly like the city-state of Rome and the city-state of England or London. And yet, the people in exopolitics would never connect the Pope and the Queen to this, as far as I know. But the correlations are all there. And then also there at the Philosophical Research Society, once again. back to Plato, back to the pineal gland and the genetic rib, you know, and then Confucius. So it's really amazing study if you start getting into this.
Yeah, these seem to be a lot of these connections seem to be, you know, they're definitely other dimensional.
Okay.
You know,
you led me there. I got to go with this.
Yeah.
CERN has a device to see into the anti-universe. So they punched the hole, but they needed a device, an antimatter annihilation detector, to be able to see the anti-universe, right?
Hmm.
Well, this has been crafted by a corporation known as Gralator. Gralator. And their corporate logo is a reptilian claw. You can see this in my Space War News. So the very that is seeing the anti-universe uses a reptilian claw as their corporate logo. I'm not kidding.
That's amazing. Yeah, it. You know, I'm wondering that. You know, this is so deep. I mean, you look in ancient times at the archons, and you look at old Egyptian pictograms, kind of way. And I've seen these ones that have these levels, and on these levels, you'll see these kind of demonic, creepy beings, you know, that, and then the grays are in there too, it seems like, and reptilians. And then the next level up is like the ignorant man. And then the next level up is more an enlightened man. And then above that, they have the gods, you know, and the higher beings. And there's all these different levels that you look at. And it seems like they kind of had it figured out. Somebody did, you know, way in the ancient past. That, you know, you want to tune upward, you know, you don't want to go down into the me, greed, power over others programs, because that's going to attune you to the low-level stuff, you know, the archons, the reptilian, and the other things, which unfortunately where most of our planet went, and now we're seeing the consequences of it. But they also had the other shot, you know, was to go upward, you know, and they had the teachings about how, you know, your soul is weighed like a feather, you know, and you can't have done, you know, a lot of harm or anything to anyone, or be carrying a lot of guilt and things like that, or you're not going to make it up into the higher levels. You know, it's kind of interesting. You look at, you know, all these different programs like that, and it just seems like we've been under the thumb of these lesser beings, these archons, and people calling on these beings through ritual, through whatever. All these mega corporations are using the symbols of these beings, and basically it's taken us to a point where we are headed towards, you know, environmental, social, environmental, and, you know, economic collapse, unless nature steps in or the higher beings step in and you know, assist with this process. But the more you look at it, the more you just see how deep this goes, and how people have sold their souls. And you know, there's got to be just some major, like, near death experience for the whole planet, you know, to turn this thing around.
Right. Well, absolutely.
But I feel, you know, this one guy, I really like this guy, and he was channeling this message. You know, he's very, very plugged in. And I love what he had to say. And I don't, you know, just the wording, I'd use a little different wording. But he was saying, you know, God has a plan. And God has given its best. And, you know, the bravest of angels are here on the earth right now. And, you know, they're being activated. They're being awakened. And there is this bigger plan. And it just seems like our whole solar system, you might say, it might even be bigger than that, is and this is going into science now, it is moving into a highly energized place in space. I think his name was Dmitry, one of the Russian scientists, and several others have noticed this. And you know, we are moving into an alignment with galactic plane. We've got the sun is just going ballistic right now. There's so much energy being pumped into this planet. I just don't see how we can go anywhere but up, you know. But there are a lot of people that are going to choose the downward spiral, and you know, their the action reaction principle or the karma, whatever you want to call it, is all going to be accelerated, as well as the awareness of who they are and what they're up to. So it does seem like that's where we're going right now, and I know, thanks to a lot of your work and things like that, people can see, you know, who's behind these mega corporations and what their agendas are, and major institutions, and who they really are and what their real program is.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what I hope to do, and to share the synchronistic path. You got me thinking about the archons. Now, according to John Lamb Lash, with the Nag Hammadi codices, the Gnostics were deeply concerned with an alien intrusion into human affairs. Now, Aleister Crowley, you know, the beast, the most nefarious magician out there, he also did not want to deal with these type of magic, which they call goetic magic, that does channel these entities like the archons. And he said that it would open a portal for the alien life wave current to exist and to come in to the alien. And so the entities called the archons, they appear identical in many ways to greys and reptilians described in these ancient Nag Hammadi codices. And the ancient seers said that the archons could not access our genetic makeup, but they can fake an intervention. And this was the typical Archon tactic of getting us to imagine and believe things that aren't true, to accept the simulation of reality like we have. And so they said that these Gnostics taught that the alien cousins could deviate the human species from its true and proper course of evolution. Now, all of a sudden, as I'm writing this article on the mind transfer technologies and on the opening gateways to these extraterrestrial currents, it was announced, and I'm not making this up, look it up for yourself, that the Archon Genomics X Prize, yes, the Archon Genomics X Prize is offering $1,000 per genome to work out the full DNA code of 100 centenarians, or 100-year-old people, in 30 days, starting September of 2013. They are going to start this Archon Genomics X Prize to decode the full DNA. Now, I mean, you know, as you start looking into this stuff, and it just blows your mind when you start to find it constantly right there in the open. You know, look up the Archon's X Prize. You know, it's right there. But, man.
Yeah, it's right in your face, you know, and people don't realize it because they're not educated to what to look for, you know. But I've seen over and over again, it's right out in the open, and you just go, oh, my God, I can't believe how blatant this is. But then, you know, you try to tell people about it, and they look at you sideways and go, oh yeah, you're one of those people. You know, you're one of those conspiracy nuts or whatever. You know, but go ahead.
Well, here I was saying Barack was Akhenaten, and that he was going to fight a space war and using an asteroid as the main threat. And right as I said that, they announced, oh, there's an asteroid hurtling towards planet Earth, going to destroy all life in 2029, and it's known as Apophis, and it comes from a near-Earth asteroid group known as the Aten. So all of a sudden, here I have Akhenaten fighting his ancient nemesis, Apophis, because Apophis was the serpent deity of destruction of Akhenaten's religion, or basically his Satan. So as soon as I was just bringing Wernher von Braun's plan to light, as Carol Rosinant came forth and said, asteroids than aliens, you know, Red Scare terrorist, asteroids, aliens. I said, well, next is asteroids, guys. And lo and behold, if they didn't, well, first they announced, oh, my God, there was an asteroid that almost hit planet Earth. It was DD445 or something like that, that came between the Earth and the moon, came within geocentric orbit of the satellites, and nearly struck Earth, and was only seen 3 days prior to the strike. And so, of course, this got JPL and everybody up with their near Earth asteroid asteroid watch and all of that. And right after that, they used that to herald in, but there is one that's coming, and it is Apophis. this. And so certainly, you know, we have Satan, the Satan of Akhenaten, coming to battle Akhenaten in office. It was too much. I mean, this is too much. If I could throw one more in there, Apophis was a Gauld of Stargate 1, you know, SG-1. And the Gauld were a reptilian race that were parasites that live inside of people. And then they would become these ancient gods of Egypt, right? Like Ra or Apophis. And when you look at Apophis in SG-1, he looks just like Obama. I mean, they are such the spitting image that I started to go through the entire cast of SG-1. Now, let me just say, at the end of every Stargate episode, it says, we gratefully want to acknowledge the cooperation of the United States Space Force, U.S. Space Command, in the creation of Stargate. So it's there in every credit, every title. And when you look at the SG crew, which was 1996, I believe, they are the Obama administration. Every single one of them. Hillary's there. Bernanke's there. Biden's there. Every one of them was a character in SG-1 back in the 90s.
That is just pretty. You know, unfortunately, I haven't watched a lot of that stuff because I kind of threw my TV set out the window in the mid-70s. And so I missed a lot of that stuff. I'll have to go back and check it out, you know, and see what the – now that I've heard this, I want to go back and maybe get the DVDs and check it out. But, yeah, it is amazing how this is all going down. Now, I'm curious – now, have you now we've covered kind of the down and dirty crazy stuff. What about the now there's definitely extremely advanced off-worlders, you know, higher dimensional beings that are observing all this, that are kind of like cheerleaders trying to get us to make the right decisions and evolve, you know, now have you looked into that side of things at all?
Well, I feel like I do have a strong connection with that. And I have personally, my whole trip began with the Palladians, with the work of Barbara Messiniak and Barbara Hanclough. And I was brought to this understanding of the Palladians. And then as I traveled around, I consistently ran into people that were Palladian or, you know, claimed to have a connection to Pallades. And strangely, as I was kind of working up my angelic power, I'll tell you, people, if you want to try something, imagine yourself with full angel wings and present yourself feeling those wings and see how your life and the world changes in front of you. And the only people I was running into was Michael, Gabriel, Gabriella, Raphael. I swear to God, everybody was an angel. It was the weirdest thing. I've very strong connection with the Palladian understanding that grew into the Celestine prophecy teachings. And you were talking about people seeing the etheric fields. And this is where most people get caught up in the Celestine prophecy teachings and the insights when they're asked to actually see these type of fields around plants and people and stuff, because people don't want to believe in their own internal world anymore. They know, oh, that's just a play, a trick of my mind or whatever. And so most people get hung up on the third insight in the Celestine prophecies. But I do personally believe that, there are groups like the Palladians. I'm not so sure about the Plagiarans that are visiting Billy Meyer and such.
Yeah.
But I definitely feel like there is a soul group, an overgroup that has my best interest at heart and are kind of jokesters. They play with me. They leave little messages that say we love you and things for me to find. And constantly feel like they're in my life. I really do.
Well, that's good. Yeah, the some of my information that I was given, you know, in meditation and hooking up with the Palladians is, you know, they talked to me about how, you know, the earth was actually created to be an Eden, and it was where we could reach the height of physicality and experience and the physical and you know, the ultimate expression on that level. And it got hijacked, you know, by these archons and reptilian beings and everything else. And there were several falls here on the earth. But what they've been telling me now is that they have more stock in here in the planet. The Palladians have more genetic stock here than any other race. or any other star nation, and that they've been kind of handed the scepter to come in and assist in getting Earth back on track again, along with other star nations. And that ties into the Native American prophecies, where they talk about the beast, and I think the beast is governed by these archons and unseen energies, and it's the major corporations and everything. And they said the beast is, this beast is going to last 2,000 years, and then it, they said right when you think there's no hope left, you know, the Earth is just totally being consumed and destroyed, and everybody is under dominated and controlled. The beast actually consumes itself. And then they said, and then after that, then the star nations return and they come in and they help, you know, they use their technologies and wisdom to clean everything up and restore the planet. So it's kind of interesting. I think about those ancient prophecies and what I'm hearing in my meditations and my own telepathic contact, and it all does seem to be that there is this huge plan that the lower level beings have had their way and they've run amok here, and now we're undergoing, it seems like, a huge awakening and cleanup process that and definitely nature and the cycles are all behind this. It's just an energy and an that can't be stopped. It's just too big of a cycle. But I'm curious about your take on that, if you've experienced, you know, similar information.
Have you ever seen the movie? It was a French film called The Beautiful Green.
No, I haven't.
You'll have to check this one out. I know, you know, you don't like to get too much programming, but this is awesome. And what it is, an extraterrestrial council on a Garden of Eden trying to decide, you know, what planets they're going to go to and help. And, you know, they call for volunteers to go to Earth, and they're like, Earth, Earth, Earth. And finally, a lady's like, oh, I'll go. No one wanted to go to Earth, right? You know, like, oh, yeah. My God, you're crazy. I can't believe it. And I personally feel that way. I feel like I came from, say, Pleiades, and that I decided to incarnate here on planet Earth. And they all thought I was totally whack. Why would I possibly come here at this time? And I feel I am just that adventurous, that I would do this thing. But as you're watching this French film, and you're watching these beings, and they're doing somersaults and backflips, and they've got all this abundance and food, and they're all loving each other, and just everything's great. And you're looking at them going, God, I want to live on that planet. I really wish I could live with those people. And then you realize, wait, this was filmed on Earth. You know, these people actually exist. This is our Garden of Eden. We've just lost sight of it. You can't have paradise without a garden. There's no doubt about that. So that is the turning point. And as soon as you start pushing the ideas of permaculture, inner city gardening, the idea of people getting out and start to lay on the land. I was on the Occupy movement a virus. I don't know. I was holding them all like, get out of your tents. Quit looking like a bunch of hobos here downtown and start planting some food. You want to see some revolution? You want to see some change? Turn all these lawns into gardens. Change this landscape. Get to know the community. Start to meet people around you. Start to know who your brothers and sisters are. Forget about all the screwy programming that they're trying to combine and fuse into your belief system, and start to get to know the real people around you. And then you can make a judgment call, because right now everything you see is illusion. Everything is not real. And all of humanity is actually beautiful, loving, caring, nurturing beings that want nothing but a blessed garden on planet Earth. So all you got heading in that direction. And so, you know, I'm very anti-political. I don't like standing up yelling about situations that are bad. I'd rather point myself in the directions that are good. You've got great things going on here at your ranch with getting the food going, getting self-sustainability going. And if everyone started to just turn that route, you know, we could turn this page on our own. And I personally believe that we have to do it on our own, that the ascended beings can help
in our understanding, help lighten our spirits, or making us enlightened, so that we can go to these tasks, even with all the fear that we have hanging over us. We can start to these tasks and start the transitions, but we have to do it, because when we're done, then we have that sense of accomplishment. If we had being and just do it all for us, we're going to still be that same spoiled brat that we are right now.
Yeah, I always tell people we're the aliens we're looking for, you know, or waiting for. You know, that they have that saying, you know, you are the ones you've been waiting for, or whatever. But you know, the same thing is that they're here to inspire and they're here to assist if we're going forward and moving forward in that direction. But they're not here to babysit. And I always think, you know, everybody goes, oh, they're just going to beam us up. You know, we can totally trash this planet, no worries, because we're all going to get beamed up. And I go, well, where are they going to put you? You know, they're going to let you trash another planet. You know, it's like it doesn't work that way. If you're not conscious and you're not awake and you're not of a certain frequency, they're not going to have you on their ships, and they're not going to infect another planet. It just doesn't work that way.
Exactly. And we stink. Yeah. Aliens stink. They don't want us on their crap.
Yeah, it's. I just find out some of these programs are so amazing, and you know, people ask me, "Well, when's the economic, you know, when's the economy going to crash and everything else?" And I go, "Why do you want to know?" And they go, "Well, I just want to leave these bonds in, you know, and take them out right at the last minute, you know, because they're going to, you know, things like that." And I go, "Why don't you just take them out now and put that money into seeds and land and start growing food and get yourself some fresh water and getting back in touch with nature? You know, why are you waiting and letting these little green pieces of paper dictate your future?" And they don't get it. You know, they go, "Well, no, I just need to know when it's going to happen." And they think they're going to pull their money out at the last minute, but then it's not going to be worth anything anyway. So what's the point?
Exactly. You know, the Hopi, in that very prophecy you were quoting there, "We are the ones we are waiting for," which, of course, Barack Obama also quoted, they state in that very prophecy, it is a time of letting go. It is a time to cast yourself from the shore into the river and to smile at the brothers and sisters that you see floating along with you. It is time now to cast aside all of these things that we believe we need, the structures, the infrastructures that we think we need to exist. It's time to cast away and float with the synchronistic stream and allow life to build itself, because it knows better how to bring into the Fibonacci series and the phi ratios than we could ever construct of our own. I am so glad that I have given my life over to this force, the synchronistic loving life that I have, because it led me to things I would have never thought of. And it led me to things and passageways and ways of existence that we would never consider, because we live inside a system. And so it is time to cut away. It is time to let it all go.
Yeah, I find that too. It's that now, you know, the more you seem to evolve, the more you really get into nature. To me, nature and spirit are first priority, and you know, we do have to take care of our basic needs of food and things like that, but really this whole program we've been sold is a very low level consciousness, a very low level existence, and the more you evolve, the more you find nature is much more important to you. Your quiet time is much more important, you know, your spiritual time, and hanging around with people that you can grow with. I mean, people that actually have something to say, you know, of an enlightened manner. They're not going to just sit there and talk about soap operas and their bad relationships and their health problems and all these other things. You're just going, "Oh my God," you know, it's like, it's like pulling teeth sometimes to hang around that kind of consciousness.
Now, that has been one of the consistent themes that we've come across in our travels. So here we are, 10 months in our school bus, traveling around home to home, trying to show everyone on Freeman TV. I film everything and put it out there. The most consistent thing that we find is people going, "Oh, my God, I'm so glad you're here, because we have no one to talk to with this stuff." And So what we have done is then, of course, I know six people in your town because of my radio show. And so I bring them all together, and then they have a lasting friendship that has now bonded. I move on and they have a good friendship. So we've been leaving this wake of friends behind us where everybody is unifying. We started our own social network called the Friendship Agenda so that everyone could come together and find one another again and then share. And it really has been working out really well. And then I'm in a movie right now with Dan Fogler of Mars Needs Moms. If you guys, oh my God, Disney programming, I could do a whole nother show on that. But of course, Dan Fogler decided to make an Awakening movie, and he's a fairly famous star. He's been in Balls of Fury and Good Luck Chuck and Mars. He made his own Awakening film where he's awakening to the New World Order, but his wife doesn't want anything to do with it. And I think that's a very critical point right now, too. And the Palladians talked about this back in the 90s with Barbara Maciniak and how you would outgrow your old relationships. So when we're saying cast away, sometimes that also means your friends and loved ones that can't ride with you in the river. You know, you've really got to let them go, too, because they are holding you down. And, or you got that common ground.
Yeah, hang on a second. I don't know if it's your mic or the connection or whatever, but all of a sudden we got really distorted there.
Better now.
You know, it's still going, but we're coming up to the end of the hour anyway, so we'll just do the best we can with it. But as usual, you know, when we start really hitting the nail on the head on something, you know, all of a sudden everything starts distorting. But, you know, typical. Yeah. But, yeah, I can hardly hear you now. It's real distorted. But anyway, we can kind of continue. We're coming up to the end of the hour now. We could probably sign off here at any time. One thing I wanted to make sure is that, you know, one thing, is there any way people can help you on your journey? Because I know, you know, we do need frog skins every once in a while. We need a little bit of funds to pay for, you know, the diesel and the bus and the other things to keep you on your mission. Is there any way people can donate or help you out on your journey?
Absolutely. And am I coming out any better? I just want to make sure that you can hear me.
Yeah, barely. It's really breaking up.
Weird. Absolutely. On freemantv.com, I have a couple of shows that you can purchase. We just had that secret insider from the Freemason Council. I do accept donations on the website. Currently, I don't have an address for people to mail checks to, but I'm working towards that. You can become a subscriber on my site where you get all of the shows for free. And That really helps. Subscriber section, donates, or purchase of shows. I have six DVDs out, so I've had one for each year that I've been doing, so you can pick up the DVDs. They are all 3 to 5 hours long, so you're getting your money's worth, no doubt about that. Of course, everything is free on freemantv.com, so you don't have to purchase anything. But if you want to help me along and to help spread this message and keep me on the air, then purchase the DVDs, the shows, or become a sponsor, a subscriber to Freeman TV. These ways really help. Then go see Don Peyote, which is the movie that I will be in with Dan Fogler. I didn't get to say the name there because we're all cut out here. But Don Peyote is the film. I'm also on HBO right now on a movie called Me at the Zoo, a documentary about a transvestite of all things. But I'm on there talking about trauma-based mind control, which they cut out most of the critical points of that. But yeah, absolutely. Just come over to freemantv.com, check it out, and then give as your heart feels. And I will put it all to use because I don't waste money. I don't need things. All I'm trying to do is this.
Yeah, that's the same thing we are here. You know, everything just kind of gets shuffled through here into, you know, more serving the community and the people coming up, you know, and you know, same thing. I don't need much. I like to live simple, and you know, if it's functional, I'm gonna have it. You know, if it serves the purpose or the goals, you know, it's great. But you know, it's like I still have too much stuff. I want to get rid of more stuff, and I keep trying to simplify, but it just keeps coming. So I need to start moving things on, you know, in my own life. It's funny, we miraculously cleared up. So again, you know, let people know that freemantv.com. freemantv.com. If you want to check out that, if you want to make a donation, that part really went out the air. You're sounding clear now, but how can people make a donation again?
Okay, so if you go to freemantv.com, you can become a subscriber, which is really a sponsor because everything is mostly free. I've only now started to put out premium content because I'm not making it. But subscribers or sponsors get everything for free. And you can be an astronaut, a ground crew, or a pilot, so depending on how much you want to give in each month. And then... or you can purchase, I have 6 DVDs if you want to purchase. I've got them on corporate logos. There are Cult Meanings, The Inside of Freemasonry, Ancient Astronauts. I've got one on, I made the first ever documentary on HARP. They get into Anna Nicole's death and trauma-based mind control with Britney Spears. And then finally, Obama cloning in the coming space war, and now I have ET and the transhumanist agenda, which is out, which is actually 5 hours long, and gets into all of the space war program and a lot of the other stuff that we've been talking about here. So any of those ways, pick up the DVDs, check out the Secret Insider from the Freemason Council show. You can get that for $2 on Freeman TV. That was a mind-blowing show. I highly recommend it. And I'm going to start putting up more and more shows that are just, you know, 99 cents an hour so that people can help sponsor me and I can put out premium content. So I've got a couple of those up now, and I'll have more coming up later. But any of those ways, and every little bit helps. This is where people are kind of lost in this situation. 6,000 people listen to me every weekend. I ask them to just simply send $1, you know, many hands, light work. So if there was kind of a tip etiquette that went along with these radio show hosts, because none of us get paid. Everybody on Oracle, everybody on American Freedom Radio, everybody that I know that is doing conspiracy talk show is doing it, you know, pro bono. They're doing it from our hearts. We're altruistic, but we can't keep going. I got to pay for the website. I got to pay for the server space, you know? So as altruistic as we want to be. So what I'm saying is, if there was a bit of a tipping etiquette where at the end of a great show, you said, oh, I'm going to give that guy $3. Don't think that $3 is a little bit of money, that it's too little. No, it's not, because there are 6,000, if not more, that could do the same thing. And if everybody just gave $1, we could really be sitting pretty. And I have a whole network I need to build. I have everybody ready to go. I just don't have any money whatsoever.
Yeah. Well, hopefully we can change that and get some people to sponsor and throw some donations your way, and definitely get your bus filled up with gas, and so you can get on to your next journey and reach as many people as possible.
That's my only goal, and to show the kindness of humanity.
Yeah.
Because you're not going to lose, are you?
Yeah. Hey, well, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show. We're going to have to be signing off. We're coming up to the end of the hour here. And, you know, hopefully we can, you know, sometimes we get a real clear signal at the studio, and it's just coming over my end where it gets garbled. So, you know, we'll check it out or do whatever editing we might need to do. But anyway, it's been a great show. It's been very enlightening. And, I think now more than ever is the time for people to just make their own personal God connection, and maybe through that process start asking for a little bit of help from the higher dimensions, because we're going to need all the help we can get to get through these times, and people are going to have to start becoming doers. You know, we can't just expect everything to be done for us.
Well, thank you so much, James, and I'm really looking forward to our sky watching tonight and my lecture here tomorrow. We're going to have a great time. And yes, you are completely correct.
Great. Hey, well, again, thanks for coming on the show. We're signing off. I'll see you out in the field. This is James Gilliland signing off, your host. Have a great evening and pay attention because things are changing. Have a good evening.